brothers and sisters, I hope that we are fully aware of the fact that God's blessings rain down upon us just as the rain falls this very morning. We are blessed immensely to be here, to be able to gather together in this way, in this safe way, in this good way, and to think upon Him and to give Him what is due, which is pure worship and devotion. I echo the thoughts of one of our shepherds, Richard, as he stood before us earlier, being so thankful for this opportunity and recognizing the blessing as well for those who are not able to be here with us in person for various reasons to be able to join us in other avenues. We are blessed to live in such a time as this that they can be edified in this way. Certainly there's nothing that benefits us more than being together in person. But certainly even being on Facebook or YouTube is better than nothing. And we're thankful so much for that opportunity for them. And as he said, it gives us an additional blessing to get the message out even further, that those who hear the message of what is being preached today, to hear the message of the songs that are being sung today, that's not confined to just these four walls, but it is literally worldwide. If there's somebody watching on the other side of the world, they can see us even right now. It might be very early in the morning for them or very late in the evening, but they can see us right now doing what we're doing. And that is a blessing. And I hope that we are thankful for it. And I hope that it might prompt some people to reach out to us and to let us know if they have questions about what we're doing here, or if they would like to study more to grow in their relationship with Jesus. That's what we want to do here at Pleasant Plains. We're thankful for the opportunities to do that on a weekly basis. Thank you for being here this morning as well. May God bless us as we open up His Word together, beginning firstly in Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7 and verses 31 through 37. I'd like to read this text with you this morning as we open up our study of God's Word. Mark chapter 7, beginning of verse 31. Mark 7 and verse 31. Again, leaving the region of Tyre, He went by the way of Sidon. This is Jesus. To the Sea of Galilee, through the region of the Decapolis. They brought Him a deaf man who had difficulty speaking and begged Jesus to lay His hand on him. So He took him away from the crowd in private, and putting his fingers in the man's ears and spitting, He touched his tongue. Looking up into heaven, He sighed deeply. Mark tells us that our Lord sighed deeply and He said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." Immediately his ears were open and his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak clearly. The text that Ron read for us this morning, Isaiah 35, it is fulfilled here in this passage. He spoke clearly. He ordered them to tell no one. But the more he ordered them, the more they proclaimed it. And they were extremely astonished and said, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak." I've made this point a number of times as we've gone through this study of Mark, and it is continually impressed upon me as I read the text and try to gauge the flow of the text, that Mark is structuring this gospel account. He is recording for us this story of Jesus in such a way that he wants us to see certain things. Because we have to recognize that anytime we tell a story, whether that be orally spoken or whether it be written down, when we tell a story, we structure that story in such a way that we want to emphasize certain things. We want the readers or the hearers to really see specific things that we believe are important to that story. And I believe that's what Mark is doing here in this gospel account. I believe that one of the things he is trying to get us to see are contrast. He wants us to see contrast between this group and that group. Two groups that might be approached by Jesus in the same manner, they come to different conclusions or they respond in different ways. I believe Mark wants us to see that. And I believe he wants us to dig in and try to understand why is it that these two groups who are seeing the same thing, why do they respond in such different ways? I believe one of those main contrasts that we see are between those who believe in Jesus, those who rejoice at his coming, and those who are hard-hearted, those who refuse to acknowledge the greatness that he has put on display. And in our last study, I believe Mark has began to really bring that to a head. He's really began to bring that to a climax within this specific gospel account. We remember that Jesus was driven away from the Jewish area by the hard-heartedness of the Jewish leadership as he confronted them about their religious tradition and the fact that they were going to hold on to it above all else and even reject God's own will in order to exalt their own. Remember that he went now into Jewish territory. And for many people, you would say, well, this is incredible. Why would Jesus be going to the Jews? Well, he is going to the Jews not only because he has been driven away by the unbelief of his own people, but he's going to the Jews because Mark, I believe, wants us to recognize, he's going to the Gentiles because I believe Mark wants us to recognize that the Gentiles are just as part of this great story as anybody else. In fact, if we go back in chapter 7, and as he starts talking about in verse 17 about the food, what defiles a person? Is it what they eat? Is it the way they wash their hands? And what he's doing here is creating a separation between Jews and Gentiles. Gentiles eat whatever they want. They don't care about washing hands. But here Jews have these dietary restrictions and they wash their hands. Is that what separates them? Mark says, no, that's not the case at all. He shows that through Jesus' teachings. In fact, he says, he gives that parenthetical at the end of verse 19, thus he declared all foods clean. I believe he is very strongly pointing towards the acceptance of the Gentiles coming into this process, this salvation that Jesus is bringing. And then we get into the narrative here of him being in these Gentile areas, and we see Jesus performing the same types of miraculous deeds that he did among the Jews. The Gentile woman came to him, asked that her daughter be healed. She was healed. What we just read a moment ago, the Gentiles bringing to him a deaf person and a mute person. He is healed, just as Isaiah prophesied. Here in chapter 8, what we're going to read in just a moment, he feeds 4,000 people, which let me strongly suggest included Gentiles based upon where he is. Here Jesus is performing the deeds that the Jewish Messiah would perform among Gentiles. That would be shocking to those who are reading this gospel account. Maybe more shocking to those who are experiencing it in real time. But maybe even more shocking than this is not what Jesus is doing necessarily, but the response of those who are seeing it. Notice the Gentile response here within the text. They were extremely astonished and said, he has done everything well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. That's why whenever Jesus tells them they're not saying anything, they can't help but say something. They can't help to proclaim it, which is the same thing we see post the resurrection with the disciples of Jesus. They're told to be quiet and they can't help but continue to speak. That, to me, is incredible. The Gentile response to the Jewish Messiah. But just as incredible, but from a negative perspective, is the lack of a good response from those who should have been closest to Jesus and most ready to acknowledge who he is. Again, the Jewish leadership, they rejected Jesus. They denied him for who he was. Jesus' own family, laid back in the text in chapter 3, they reject him and don't acknowledge him. And then, maybe most puzzling of all, those who have followed him all along the way. His handpicked disciples. Those who were privy to incredible acts that we could only dream of. Even they had a hard time seeing Jesus for who he was. Acknowledging him. Accepting him and responding in the appropriate way. My question is why? Why could they not see? Maybe we can ask that this morning. Why can people not see today? In a very literal sense, why can people not see today? Well, those who can't see are blind. And I believe that's the problem we have here with the Jewish leadership and even Jesus' own disciples. They're blind. Not literally. It is not as if their eyes are not functioning, but their heart is hard. Their heart is blind, and for that reason, they cannot see who Jesus really is. What I want us to recognize about this section of Mark's gospel is that he presents Jesus here as being this great servant of God who is coming to confront spiritual blindness. Remember, he's setting up this contrast. Look at the Gentiles. They have their eyes open, meaning they have their hearts open. They have their hearts ready to receive Jesus. And based upon what they see of Jesus, they proclaim his goodness. They proclaim that he has done all things well. They even, I believe, make the connections to the prophets. Look, everything the prophets said the Messiah would do, here he is doing it. And yet, as we're about to read, that is contrasted with the hard hearts, the blinded eyes of those who should have been most ready. Let's read this text together. Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, going through verse 26. Let's look at these four pretty short sections together. Let us acknowledge a couple of things I think really sets up this gospel to read the way it does. And then we're going to look at that last section. It's very odd, very strange miracle that Jesus performs. Very different from most other miracles he performs. We're going to talk about that, why that is, and of what I believe Mark is trying to do here in presenting the miracle as he does. Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, In those days, there was again a large crowd, Mark 8 and verse 1, and they had nothing to eat. He called the disciples and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd because they've stayed with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way, and some of them have come a long distance. His disciples answered him, where can anyone get enough bread here in this desolate place to feed these people? He asked them, how many loaves do you have? Seven, they said. He commanded the crowds to sit down on the ground. And taking the seven loaves, he gave thanks, broke them, and gave them to his disciples and to set before the people. So they served them to the crowd. They also had a few small fish. And after he had blessed them, he said these were to be served as well. They ate and were satisfied. And they collected seven large baskets of leftover pieces. About 4,000 were there. He dismissed them, and he immediately got into the boat with his disciples and went to the district of Dalmanutha. The Pharisees came, verse number 11, and began to argue with him, demanding of him a sign from heaven to test him. Sighing deeply in his spirit, he said, why does this generation demand a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given to this generation. Then he left them, got back into the boat, and went to the other side. The disciples now had forgotten to take bread and had only one loaf with them in the boat. Then he gave them strict orders. Watch out. Watch out. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. And they were discussing among themselves that they did not have any bread. Aware of this, he said to them, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Don't you understand or comprehend? Do you have hardened hearts? Do you have eyes and not see? Do you have ears and not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000? And how many baskets of leftovers did you collect? 12, they told him. When I broke the seven loaves for the 4,000, how many baskets full of pieces did you collect? Seven, they said. And he said to them, don't you understand yet? And they came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and brought him out of the village, and spitting on his eyes and laying his hands on him, he asked him, do you see anything? He, being the blind man, looked up and he said, I see people, but they look like trees walking. Again, Jesus placed his hands on the man's eyes, and the man looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Then he sent him home. Jesus sent this now seeing man home, saying, don't even go into the village. Now, as we're reading this text together, you might say, well, this seems like deja vu. Have we not read this before about Jesus feeding a large multitude? Yes, on two accounts. Yes, we've already read it because a similar story took place in the text earlier where Jesus fed 5,000, which he references here within this text. But yes, we actually ended our last study of Mark in this section because this section does a great job of really laying out two different ideas for us. Number one, it concludes Mark's telling about the need for understanding of the acceptance of the Gentiles, the foreshadowing of that. It ends that section, but also begins this section of showing us the short-sighted spiritual blindness of those who should have seen most clearly. does a really good job of that. So I wanted to end that lesson with this text. I want to begin it back here. And I want to begin it back here because the way it fits into our study this morning concerning spiritual blindness is the fact that what we are seeing here is a little bit of short-term memory loss, it seems. Remember, we're in Gentile territory. I believe that is the case because the text says, in those days. What we have seen previously to that is Jesus going into the area of the Decapolis, which was known in those days as Rome away from Rome. It was a very Roman, very Gentile area. Great loyalty to the Empire of Rome, which of course would have been most readily seen within Gentiles themselves. We wouldn't really have that much from Jews. I believe we are in Gentile territory here. And I believe also that there are Gentiles here within this multitude who are being fed because Jesus is concerned with the fact that number one, they've been with him for a while. He's in Gentile territory. It makes sense for Gentiles to be with him. But then Mark phrases these people as being people who have come from a long distance, people who have come from far away, which is Old Testament language to indicate Gentiles, that Jesus or that the Messiah is going to call people from far away unto him, which is almost always used to indicate Gentiles. We have here Jesus feeding at the very least, a mixed multitude of Gentiles and Jews here who are in need of food, which, oh, by the way, we've seen this before. So have the disciples. Which we would think means that they're going to see this situation being the exact same. Jesus is teaching, multitudes gather, they're in the wilderness, we're going to see. They're in need of food. The first time this happened, Jesus miraculously feeds them with very insufficient means. And we would hope that the disciples, they see this exact same situation occurring before their eyes. We would hope that they would understand this is their second chance to show their understanding of Jesus, to show the fact that they believe he has the ability to fully provide and fully satisfy for the people's needs. We're thinking this is the second chance. Here they are. They're going to do it better. And yet, whenever he says that we need to feed them, if we send them away, they're going to collapse on their long journeys. Instead of them saying, well, let's gather up whatever small means we have. Let's give it to you so you can multiply it for them. Well, this is their response. Where can we get enough bread here in this desolate place to feed these people? How are we going to do that, Lord? And our palms smack our foreheads. Why? How are they not getting it? How could they be so forgetful so quickly? How could that be the case? Here they are missing it again. And yet, might I remind you that maybe we shouldn't be too hard on them because this seems to simply be just the way humans are. Maybe we see that within our own lives, forgetting things so quickly. But my mind is taken back to the studies that Alan and I have been doing in the Old Testament and the Torah and the Pentateuch and thinking through Exodus and Numbers and Leviticus and thinking about the stories. How often do the children of Israel do the exact same thing? They come out of Egypt and they forget how bad Egypt was because they don't like the current circumstances they're in. So they say, oh, we wish that we could go back to Egypt and be fed in Egypt, have all these wonderful things in Egypt. When that wasn't the case, they had forgotten. That's revisionist history. That wasn't a reality. And yet God, in his loving kindness and in his patience, he provides for them. Well, what happens a few page turns later? Again, they need water, they need food. And instead of saying, hey, you know what? God provided for us in this last moment. Maybe we should just go to him and ask him, Lord, let us experience your loving kindness. Let us experience your provision. Please, we are in need of what you can give. They complain. And they grumble, and they cause problems for Moses. You see, brothers and sisters, I think this short-term memory loss, it isn't, if we're being honest here, it isn't something that just the disciples dealt with. It does seem just to be human nature. Yet it is this short-term memory loss, this quickly forgetting of what Jesus has done for them just recently that blinds them from the opportunity that is before them for Jesus to work his miraculous power. They don't recognize it and they miss out on a great opportunity to show their understanding and to show their growth in this process. But it isn't just the disciples, of course, that are struggling in really seeing Jesus and understanding who he is because of spiritual blindness. It is, of course, also the Jewish leadership, because as they come to Jesus, after they cross back from the eastern side of Galilee, they now go back to the western side, and they now go to Dalmanutha on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. They're back in Jewish territory now. And remember, last time that Jesus left them, the whole reason he went east across Galilee was because he has just eviscerated them. He has just given them a thorough spiritual tongue lashing because of their rotten theology and because of their complete lack of respect and reverence for God's word. Well, now he comes back over to the other side, and they're going to quickly go to him, and they're going to say, you know what, this is what we want to see from you, Jesus, you so-called incredible prophet, you so-called incredible person. We don't want to see you do something, you know, just like heal the blind or heal the sick or do anything like that. No, we want to see a sign from heaven. We're thinking Old Testament prophets, fire coming down, just burning up and consuming something. That's what we want to see. And notice Jesus' response. The text tells us in verse 12 that he sighed deeply, which is not the first time we've seen this. We saw that back in chapter 7, didn't we? What we read earlier, chapter 7 and verse number 34, he sighed deeply this first time whenever he healed this man. I don't believe this sigh here in chapter 8 is the same kind of sigh. I think this is a sigh of frustration. I think this is a sigh of him being just not... Him being upset that they're just not getting it. Him being disappointed in the fact that instead of being content with what Jesus has shown them, because let's remember, the Jewish leadership, they've seen Jesus' power on full display already. Let's go back to chapter 2. The Pharisees are here in chapter 8. Chapter 2, they're good friends of scribes. They're in the house where the man is let down through the ceiling. The paralyzed man, they were there, they saw Jesus not only heal him, but forgive him of his sins. So they know exactly what Jesus is capable of doing and even what Jesus has done. And yet that's not enough for them. We want to see a direct sign from heaven if we're going to crown you as being something special. You see, friends, they're coming to Jesus and they're demanding him on their terms. They're demanding Jesus on their own terms. They are not satisfied with what he is offering. They want more. And Jesus says, you're not getting it. This generation will not receive a sign. And they would not receive a sign because even if he gave them the sign, they still want to believe. How do we know that? You say, Nick, that's pretty presumptuous. Well, we know that because we know the rest of the story, don't we? The greatest sign from heaven was given. His resurrection from the dead after 3 days. And yet so many still didn't believe. Why? Because all they wanted to do is jerk Jesus around. They just want to lead him whichever they wanted to lead him. They wanted him on their terms. And we need to recognize that Jesus, whenever he came to earth, he wasn't coming to earth on the whims of mankind. He wasn't coming to earth to fulfill the desires of mankind. He was coming to earth to fulfill the will and desires of his Father. It was his Father to whom he was obedient. His Father had given him miraculous deeds to perform, which he had done up to this point. He was not going to allow mankind to dictate his mission. His mission was given from heaven. And that was the mission he was going to follow. And Jesus then takes this interaction between himself and the Jewish leadership. And just picture in your mind kind of like those little cartoon scenes where you have a map and you have a map in these different points. And there's kind of a ship that's going along. And there's these little dotted lines. And you're kind of following them as they're going along on a journey. Just imagine the Sea of Galilee here. This is what Jesus is doing. Just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Because the text tells us now that he gets it back in the boat and he goes to the other side again. But the next story doesn't begin on the other side. It actually begins while they're in the boat. Because while they're in the boat, what we see is the disciples, well, they recognize that they don't have the sufficient bread in order to feed their group. that they have forgotten to prepare bread for this section of the journey. Maybe they weren't ready to go back so quickly. Maybe they weren't ready to get off the boat and have this disagreement and get ready to hop back on and go somewhere else again. By the way, where they're going is Bethsaida. That's the direction in which they're going. But what Jesus is doing, as he so often does, is he takes the situation that they have just experienced and he uses it to teach a very strong and important spiritual message. His message this time to the disciples is, watch out. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Beware of the leaven of Herod. Simplified, be wary of those who reject me. That's really the simplest understanding. Be wary of those who reject me. Don't let their rejection of me influence you. Yet, what we see here is Jesus used the word that they just really focused on, and it allowed them to get their focus all out of whack, and that word was leaven. Leaven. Oh, no, he just used the word leaven. Does he know that we forgot bread? Does he know that we have failed in this responsibility that we have just to keep all of us fed? Does he see that? And they become fixated on that issue. Their lack of bread. They don't take the whole situation and realize that Jesus is trying to get deeper and trying to teach them something that's going to benefit them spiritually. No, they're just focused on the bread. Which we see the frustration of Jesus here, because he begins to interrogate them. He gives them the fifth degree here. Do you see all the questions that he asks for them? Because he's aware of this. He knows their hearts. He knows what's on their mind. That's why he begins to ask them, why are you discussing the fact that we have no bread? Question one. Why don't you understand? Question two. Why don't you comprehend? Question three. Do you have hard hearts? Question four. Do you have eyes that do not see and ears that do not hear? Question five. And do you not remember? Six. Seven-ish questions, depending on how you break it down, right in a row. Bam, 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 bam. Don't you get it? Don't you understand? Don't you see what I'm trying to get you to see? And Jesus really answers his own question, doesn't he? He answers his own question. The problem is their hard hearts. Which is exactly what we've already seen from Mark's perspective. Remember, if we go back in the text, the walking on the water in chapter 6, in verse 52, actually verse 51, that Jesus was walking on the water, he's walking on the water, and he ends up getting into the boat. The wind ceases. It says they were completely astounded. This is the disciples. Because they had not understood about the loaves, even ties in a previous episode, a previous feeding of 5,000. But he sets it up as for us to understand as though they didn't understand. And they didn't understand because their hearts were hardened. They didn't understand because they were spiritually blind. That's from Mark's perspective as he's writing this. But now there's another layer of this understanding, of their misunderstanding or lack of understanding, from Jesus' perspective. It isn't just that Mark is able to look back and see their hardened hearts. No, in the moment, Jesus sees their hardened hearts. In the moment, Jesus confronts them about their hardened hearts. Why is it that they were blinded to what Jesus had been doing? What was the root cause of their spiritual blindness? Let me suggest to you, it's because their focus was in the wrong place. They're focused in the wrong place. Go back to the original feeding of the 5,000. Remember their sarcastic remark, well, are we really going to go spend 200 denarii to get bread for everyone? Their focus is on money. Their focus is on the food. Go back to the walking on the water. Where's their focus? It's on the waves. It's on their lives being in danger. Go back to where we are here. Where's their focus on? Their focus is on a lack of bread. And Jesus using that word leaven, which gets them scared and worried that he might be on to them. Brothers and sisters, the spiritual blindness of the disciples was clearly seen in the fact that they were not focused on the right things. They were focused on the problems. They weren't focused on the solution. How do we know that? Look what Jesus says. Hey, the 5,000. Once I performed that miracle, how many baskets did you pick up? So 12, which symbolism, maybe. Maybe that's there, 12 baskets, 12 disciples, maybe that's there. He's like, okay, well, what about this latest feeding, 4,000? How many baskets did you pick up there? Well, 7. Again, symbolism, completeness, showing his ability to fully satisfy, maybe. But you want to know the real number that stands out to me? 19. 19. That there have been 9,000 people fed by Jesus through a means that would not feed everybody in this room right now. And not only were they fully satisfied, but they had leftovers. They were focused on the problems. And Jesus said, you were completely blinded to the solution that I gave you. You were completely blinded to the power I had that led to the solution. Here we see Jesus' frustration. He says, don't you understand yet? Don't you understand? And then what Mark does here is record a miracle for us that I don't believe is in any of the other Gospels. It's peculiar, in that way. But it's also weird. I'm not going to use that word. It's weird. It's unique because it doesn't happen immediately. Flip back real fast, chapter 7. As Jesus says, Ephatha, be opened. What is said next? Verse 35, what does it begin with? Timestamp there. If you do Bible color marking, it should be underlined in green. What does it say there? Immediately, right? Or right away, right then, chapter 7 and verse 35, he was healed. He could talk, he could hear. Yet as we go into this story, Jesus does everything very similarly. He takes the man by the hand, leads him out of Bethsaida, just as he led that person out of the village. He does something with his hands again, puts his hands over his eyes, does some spitting, kind of weird, but hey, Jesus can do what he wants to do. And he asks him the question, can you see? And where 99.9% of Jesus' miracles, the person would say, yes, I see, 20/20, best vision I've ever had. This man says, no, I can't actually see. I see people walking around, but they look like trees. Oh, did he see giants? Is that what happened? Well, no. Who's been to the eye doctor anytime recently? Maybe we haven't because, 2020, but got my eyes dilated a few days ago. Had to take my contacts out and walking through the eye doctor's office, and I can't see a thing. I mean, it is blurry as all get out. I'm lucky I didn't run into a wall. Even worse, once they dilated my eyes, I felt like my mom. Hopefully she's not watching this morning. I had to hold my phone way out here to be able to see it later on. Really messing my eyes. I'm not used to that. But that's all it was. He just could not see. We'll say he went from blindness to maybe, let's say, 40-40 vision. I assume that's not that great. We'll just say he went from complete blindness to 40-40 vision. And some people, they read this, they think, oh, Jesus is slipping. Jesus is slipping. Why has he not fully healed him already? What's the issue here? What's the problem? And we recognize the problem is not Jesus. Because all Jesus has to do is put his hands over the guy's eyes again, and then he is completely healed. He sees very clearly. Believe what Mark is doing here. What he is doing here as he presents this man, this divine vision test, this miraculous vision test, is he's showing in this single man the stages of spiritual blindness that we've already seen in the story. The man originally comes to Jesus, he's completely blind. Like who? Like the Pharisees. The Pharisees who come to Jesus, they can't see Jesus worth anything. They can't recognize him at all, and they can't recognize him at all because they want to see him on their terms. Yet their terms are not sufficient. They are completely spiritually blind. He goes from that state, though, of complete spiritual blindness to just, he can sort of see. That's where the disciples are, aren't they? They can sort of see. They can sort of see because they're willing to stick with Jesus. They're willing to continue working with Jesus. They're willing to continue to support Jesus in his ministry. But even while sitting there beside Jesus and physically seeing everything that he's doing, their hearts are still hard. And that's why everything that they see with their eyes clearly, their hearts only see with blurry vision. They're not comprehending it completely. Yet what does Mark foreshadow here? What Mark foreshadows is healed sight in the future. Because that's where they're moving towards. If we know this story, that we know that's where they're moving. We have the Pharisees who are completely blind. We have the disciples who in this moment and in moments in the future are going to be blurry vision. They're going to have good moments. Our next lesson is going to lead us to that. A really good moment, a really high point with Peter's good confession. But that's going to be followed up very quickly by a low point with Peter. Not having his focus where Jesus needs it to be. But in the future, following the resurrection, following the ascension, who are going to be the leaders of this movement is going to be these men. They now see clearly. And they're going to bring sight to everyone else. And in an indirect way, they're going to bring sight to us. They're going to bring sight to us through their work, through their writings, and through their teachings. Yet, even though we have their stories, even though we have their writings, even though we have their teachings, we have to recognize that this spiritual blindness problem is still a problem today. That's why I want to ask us three quick questions. Here's the first one. Are we too quick to forget about the goodness of Jesus in our own lives? Could it be that we find ourselves spiritually blind because we too forget of the goodness of Jesus? I think about Psalm 103. Psalm 103, in those first couple of verses, David says, "My soul, bless the Lord, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. My soul, bless the Lord, and do not forget his benefits." Do not forget his benefits. Contextually, the benefit is the forgiveness of sins. Brothers and sisters, as we're confronted with temptation, as we're confronted with the opportunity to sin, do we forget the incredible feeling of living guilt-free? Do we forget that? Do we forget that to the extent that we allow ourselves to go back into the horrible condition of being weighed down by sin? That's only a conclusion I can come to. If we are living guilt-free from sin because of the grace of Jesus and our faith, and yet if we allow ourselves to move from that condition into the place where we again are entangled in sin, the only way I can imagine that someone would go from here to there is if they have just forgotten how good it is here. Do we forget? Maybe we do. Maybe we do. May God bless us and heal us of that spiritual blindness. May we not forget his benefits, his blessing. But secondly, here's a question as well. Do we try to shape Jesus into who we want him to be? That was the spiritual blindness of the Pharisees. They wanted Jesus on their terms. Are we guilty of the same? Could we be guilty of the same? Could we twist and distort Jesus, the picture of him that we have in Scripture? Could we do that to the extent that we try to get him to how we want him to be? We want to establish this caricature of Jesus. This meme that I've seen where it's this depiction of Jesus. He's got big blue eyes, long brown hair, big bright smile, and he's giving thumbs up. Maybe we've seen this before, this depiction of Jesus. Well, people love that depiction of Jesus because that's Jesus saying, "Hey, do whatever you want. Have a fun time. Don't worry about me." People love this caricature of hippie Jesus. Just living happy, living free, not really having to care about anything in the world. You know, friends, that's not Jesus at all. That's not Jesus at all. Yes, Jesus came to serve. Yes, Jesus came to set free. But he came to serve and set free for the purpose of us living according to the will of his Father, just as he did. Maybe we can't see that about Jesus. Maybe we're blinded to that being the reality of Jesus because we're trying to see him in some other way. We're trying to twist him and distort him to our own desires. But here's the last question then. Do we also miss Jesus altogether because we're focused on the world? Could that be it? Could it be that we don't recognize the goodness of Jesus? Could it be that maybe we don't recognize his will and desire for us as his people because we're just not even concerned with that because we're focused on other things? We're focused on the bread. We're focused on the leaven. We're focused on the family. We're focused on the job. We're focused on the entertainment. We're focused on the politics. We're focused on anything at all in this world that takes our focus off of Jesus.
Amen.
Could it be that we're blinded to him because our eyes are over here? Could that be the case? If it is, what do we need to do? We just need to shift our focus. Get it off of that which in the end does not matter. And get it to the eternal destination, which is Jesus himself. These are the questions we have to ask. We feel ourselves, and we feel as if we're in a position where we too are spiritually blind. Ask ourselves these questions. Let's find the root cause of the spiritual blindness. Is it because we forget so quickly? Could it be because we're trying to shape Jesus into our own likeness of Jesus? Could it be maybe that our eyes are just in the wrong place? Let's find the cause, brothers and sisters. Jesus came. He came to give words to the mute, to give hearing to the deaf. Brothers and sisters, he came to give sight to the blind. Yes, physically first, but ultimately that is only showing his power and ability to do that on a spiritual level, which brings such greater results. The bottom line is this: we must keep our eyes on Jesus, because blinded hearts will never be able to see Jesus for who he truly is. And if we cannot see him for who he truly is, the Son of God, the Messiah, our Savior, we're never going to experience the benefits. We're never going to experience the blessings. We're never going to find that relationship with him. We must keep our eyes opened and focused on Jesus.